Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Lemonade Podcast. This is Steph I Will, aka Misty Nice Twist Out, which might change soon, or just Stephanie. And this episode was going to be just one where I interview Jeremy Whitley, but there was just too much going on for me to not at least say a few things before this episode jump right into the interview. So I really want to just talk to you guys about the crew and some other stuff. So Black Panther and the Crew by Ta-Nehisi Coates actually came out this past Wednesday, and I was very, very, very late reading it per usual. And when I finally did, no one warned me. It'd have been nice if someone did, because I just wasn't ready for it. Not that the writing was terrible, because it's not, it's Ta-Nehisi Coates, but just the actual content. Now, the overall story, I didn't have a problem with, because I know that he has to kind of, I guess, dance around when it comes to what he talks about and what he's able to talk about, given Nighthawk was shut down. And Marvel right now. I don't know how political you can get, but I take that back, because obviously you can get pretty political if you're a white guy, Nick Spencer, and you want to turn folks into Hydra agents, aka Nazis. But I digress. I was reading The Crew and I was like, oh wow, okay, Misty is kind of centric in this, but oh wow, Misty is kind of centric in this. So she is very, 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 very pro cop. I mean, at one point I just thought that she was just going to go ahead and hand Storm a Pepsi. Like, she was David Clark's Misty Knight. And yeah, that might sound a little extreme, but if you read it, then you'll kind of see those parallels, because I don't know, this Misty Knight is more closely the take of the Misty Knight from the Luke Cage Netflix series. But even still, that Misty Knight, by the end of episode 13, I feel like those rose colored glasses that she had on not only were shattered, but they were thrown away into the garbage. Garbage was taken to the landfill, compacted, burned, and then thrown in the ocean somewhere. So I don't know. Like, I don't like it, of course. You know I don't like it, but I'm really, really trying my best to see reason, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to. But like, she, spoiler alert, because I'm going to get into this. So if you haven't listened to, if you haven't read The Crew yet, then you might just want to fast forward maybe a minute or two, but I'm going to get into some spoilers of some things, I guess some plot points from The Crew issue. So Ezra is a black man who is a social activist in Harlem, and Harlem is a very real place. So it isn't like some, you know, fake place. So Harlem is a very real place. So please keep that in mind, and just the context of just all of this. So he is an elderly man by this time, and he is taken into police custody where he dies. And if that doesn't sound familiar, it really should. I mean, I'm instantly thinking of Sandra Bland and just so many countless other black lives that have been lost while they were in police custody. So he's killed. I mean, I don't know if he's killed. I'm assuming that he is, but he's found dead in his cell. So his family, and then this woman who is Storm. I mean, like, it's pretty obvious that it's Storm, but Misty is like, she hasn't really known her or since way back or something like that. I'm just like, but didn't y'all just hang out? So I don't know what the time frame is on this, but I'm like, Misty, like, you know Storm. Like, y'all definitely Fearless Defenders, like, you know Storm. But anyways, Misty is all just pro cop, and she's like, you're not one of those people, meaning cop haters. And you know, she's just really dismissive and just whatever to this elderly black man dying in police custody. And it's just like, wow. Like, even in Misty's heyday of being, I guess, really close to being pro cop in the early 90s, even still, like, that didn't, this is a new Misty for me. Even while doing Misty Knight's Uninformed Afro and just having some of those issues fresh in my mind, like, I never really got that sense of this from Misty. Like, I know that she is by the book and by the badge, but to me, it just doesn't feel right that she would be so dismissive of an elderly black man dying in police custody and in Harlem at that, somewhere where she's from. So I don't know about that. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the story arc for this is probably her learning that, you know, that the system is crooked and so on and so forth. But it just kind of feels like a step backwards, because even if this is a Misty from the Luke Cage Netflix series, even she, by the end of that, you know, understood that, hey, the system is broken. So I don't know. And then, like, she said some other stuff. I was sick by the time I finished reading this, because y'all know how I feel about Misty. And she at one point calls the police, the mirror cops, the robots or whatever, her tribe. And I was just like, girl, sis, what are you doing right now? What is going on? And after Black Panther issue 7, when we were introduced to the new crew and what that group consisted of, I wasn't really necessarily a fan of, you know, the way Ta-Nehisi Coates was writing Misty. But I was like, you know, whatever, I'm not about to be nitpicky. But we got into this and I'm just like, oh, so Yana Harvey, you just couldn't write her either, huh? That's fine. So, I mean, overall, it is not horrendous, because, I mean, it is, I guess the story is solid. I feel like I'm really, really reaching right now. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as possible and it's just not working out for me. But look, if you would like to check it out, I'm not going to deter you from it. I'm probably going to at least try to support it for 2 more books. But I mean, the way that I feel about Marvel and also DC, I'm just like, you know, my coin can go elsewhere. It really could. And not to like jump. So I think I'm done talking about the crew. So, you know, if that's something you want to check out, you can. But I mean, Misty is looking real bad. Like, Misty might as well, you know, be able to serve Pepsi up out of her vibranium arm, you know, because it's David Clark. I felt like she would be voting for Trump after reading this. Like, I felt like she would be on security detail of the Trump campaign. I could be being very extra and extreme, but that's just honestly how I felt after reading this. So anyway, well, as I was saying, like with Marvel and DC, I just really don't feel compelled to support books when I'm just like, I'm not feeling this. And it's nothing more annoying than people trying to get you to like something you just don't like. I'm not going to do that. If you don't like it, you just don't like it. And that's fine. But comics aren't cheap. So, and I mean, for a lot of people, it's a luxury. So why waste money on something that you just don't care for out of the, I guess, quote unquote, greater good of trying to support this book because it's by a black man or another person of color? You know, I'm real late talking about this because I hadn't had an episode, but I know the VP of Marvel had statements about how diversity doesn't sell. And of course, he's backpedaled since then. And one, of course, that's a lie. I mean, the numbers do tell a very different story, but also there just seems to be this thing for people of color, black folks, that, especially for Marvel and DC, if the writer is black, if it is a person of color, as you know, whatever, that even if the, or no, I take that back. If they just have characters that are quote unquote diverse and inclusive, and regardless of who's writing it, if the actual story itself and the writing itself is just subpar and it's not really good, or you're not really rocking with it, you know, there's those guilts. It's just still supported, because if you don't, then you have to be ran a story of, oh, diversity doesn't sell, women don't sell, so on and so forth. And it's not it. I mean, you can't just package up something, slap diversity on it, and then think that that's all it's going to take to sell. Like, there are so many other factors that are included in this. And then also, not everybody goes to a local, I don't know how many times I could say this, not everybody, one, has a local comic book shop that they go to. Not everybody wants to go to a local comic book shop. And once again, comics are kind of expensive. Marvel comics, $3.99, $4.99 per issue. That gets expensive, especially if you are picking up multiple books a week. DC, a little bit better, $2.99. But again, still gets expensive. So And a lot of people, they don't buy issue by issue. They buy the trades, but then the books get canceled before the actual trades can come out. And then as far as digital sales are concerned, a lot of folks buy their books that way. I know I do. Sometimes I end up buying a book twice because I'm buying physical and digital, but Marvel, not so much because they actually have the digital copy with it if you buy the physical copy. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not, there are like many facets to the way comics are sold, and I'm just getting a little tired of just this same tired narrative of diversity doesn't sell, women don't sell, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, but no, you're not, the bottom line numbers that you have are not painting the entire narrative. They're just not. And they're also sometimes not even the full truth. So it's just, and libraries, like if they were able to, and it's 2017, I feel like somebody could figure this out, but a way to take all of the digital sales so they're just not so anonymous, and then also, you know, what are libraries ordering? What are people checking out? To be able to take all of those numbers along with diamond numbers, and I really feel like the narrative would be different, but I've gone off on a tangent so far from the crew, but if you would like to check the crew out, go ahead. I'm not gonna side eye you. I totally get it, and I'm probably gonna check it out for one or two more books. And I know that doesn't, you know, really count as giving it its full story arc because that's usually within five issues. But again, my money can go elsewhere. Like, my money can go to Motor Crush, which I finally sat down and read and got caught up with, and I really like it. And that's by Image Comics. Eclipse. Lumberjanes, I just started reading. I really like that. True, I'm late to that, and I really like that. Of course, you guys know I stand for Alien Defiance. So, Afar, have you guys checked that out? If you haven't, check it out. It's a really great story. That is also, hey, on Comixology. So, I mean, like, there is, it's not just Marvel and DC. Like, there are so many other options out here. That's why I just can't, if they're not cutting it, then I'm just like, okay, well, then why am I wasting my time? I mean, for Lion Forge, Joseph Illich, Catalyst Prime is going to be coming out very soon. I think that's like less than a month away because of Free Comics Day. So y'all got options. It doesn't just have to be Marvel. It doesn't just have to be DC. It doesn't have to be even some of the independents and putting up some things that are subpar and they're just not for you. So, I mean, in this economy, you need to be getting your money's worth. And I guess that's my rant. It's 13 minutes into it, so I do apologize, but that is not all I wanted to talk about. There are a few other things because it's just always something going on. So I know you guys have probably heard this to death, but just my two little cents on John Ridley's Guerrilla and also Kathryn Bigelow's Detroit. And for John Ridley's Guerrilla, if you haven't heard by now, the erasure of Black women. Like, there are a couple Black women that are part of this, but it's, so Guerrilla is about the Black Panther Party in Britain and that entire movement. And of course, Black women were just as much a part of that as Black men. But for this series, they're not really in the forefront. In fact, an Asian woman is. Her name is Frida Pinto, and she is actually more so in the forefront along with the other Black male character. And it's just kind of like, but what are we doing? So there's been conversations about, you know, Asian representation versus Black erasure, and it has gotten really muddy and just messy. Yeah, like I said, I'm just going to put my two cents in it. And that, coupled with the trailer that was just released for Kathryn Bigelow's Detroit, which is starring John Boyega and some white women, you know, these are actual real historical events. Now, John Ridley said that he did what he did because he did not want his non-Black wife to not feel included. And I'm just like, but sir, you know, what? I mean, even that is just in context, out of context, it just sounds like, but what are we doing? And just the erasure and lack thereof of Black women in both of these, the show and also the movie. Of course, when Black women pointed this out, the Silence Brigade came out white, black, all of that came out. And it was just like, what do y'all gain out of that? Like, what is it hurting you that we're speaking up and we're saying, hey, this ain't, you know, what's going on? Like, my grandparents were very much a part of the movement, not mine specifically, but I'm just saying black women saying like, hey, my grandpa, I know about this because I didn't just Google search and I clicked the first link that came up. Like, my grandparents were actually a part of this movement, my grandmother. So this erasure doesn't make any sense because it's actual historical events. Same thing for like Detroit. And I just don't get it. Like, it's irritating and it's annoying and it makes no sense either way, whether it's fictional erasure for black women or real. Like, it's just, I don't understand what people get out of, you know, just coming and telling us to shut up. Like, what are you gaining from that? And I've started to pay attention to that and actually follow those. I mean, not follow them, but actually go and see, like, you know, what is their affiliation with either the project or just what is their motives? And sometimes, I mean, it does reveal some things, but it's just always weird to me when black women speak up and then like all of these people just come in and just say, you should shut up. And it's just like, but what do you have to gain from that? It's always, I mean, y'all know I know all about that. The day I messed up and I asked about representation for black women in superhero movies and shows and so on and so forth and how that went. And it's just, that was one thing. You know, it's fictional. Still, like I said, annoying, but to see that happen again repeatedly, as black women called out both John Ridley and, you know, what's going on with this Detroit movie from the trailer, it's just amazing. Like, I don't really don't even have any words for it. I just, what do you have to gain from it? Like, what, like, does it make you sleep better at night? Like, what is the situation? Because it's weird. It really honestly is. But enough of that. I mean, and then for those that say, well, it's just a trailer, it's just, but the thing is that optics matter. So I should be able to kind of tell, like, what's going on in this movie. And then also, like, who really are some of the major players in this movies. And if you tell me a black woman is in it and she has just an important role as, you know, the other characters that were pretty prominent, then I shouldn't have to go to IMBD and then like scroll and then continue to scroll and then scroll some more till I always get to the bottom of the damn page to find, oh, there's that one black woman. And we don't even know if Samira Wiley really is in this film. So I, again, another tangent, and I don't apologize, but I mean, just like, what are we doing? Just, what are we doing? A question for 2017 and probably from 2017 on. So going on to something that is not going to send me into a rage. Chewing Gum Season 2. Amusing, beautiful things happen when black women are able to write, create, direct, and produce their own things. It really is, because you have something like Chewing Gum. Like, I'm not going to get too much into detail about a recap because I actually have a recap that I've done with Shannon from Nerds of Prey, so be on the lookout for that. That should be up soon. But just Michaela Cole, just God bless her, for real, because Chewing Gum, season one and two, but specifically season two, was just everything I didn't know that I needed and wanted, but it's there. Like, I think I was telling Shannon, like, this just reminds me of like a Van Wilder, this type of gross comedy that usually is reserved for white men and sometimes white women too, and your American Pies and stuff like that, and a coming of age story. And she delivers that and she gives that to us, along with other commentary on, you know, classism, colorism, and so on. So, I mean, she is a freaking genius. I want to see her in everything. I want her to do everything, and just, God bless Michaela Cole. And I'm just going to put this out here. Look, got me sound like Nelly, but put this out here. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing her and Louis Tan in the project. What that project would be, I'm not really sure. But, you know, if it ever happened, then I'd be there with my coinage to support it and just tell everybody about it. So, yeah. So, Chewing Gum. Again, if it's not your cup of tea, it's not your cup of tea. But if you have not checked it out, that is something that I really do recommend. Like, I've watched season two 3 times all the way through since last Saturday when I did the live tweet with the NYC film chick. So chewing gum, you just some self-care. If you want, you need another show to add to that list, definitely add chewing gum to that. Another thing to add to your list is, I guess, the season of Doctor Who. I was scrambling to my remote to see. I didn't even know I had BBC America. And I was like, oh, wait, that is a part of my Sling package. So I was scrambling to hurry up and change to it. And this honestly is probably going to be the first Doctor Who season that I actually make the supreme effort to watch weekly. And the entire time I was watching, I just couldn't get over Bill and just how stunning she is. And just, she was already asking all the right questions and everything that the doctor needed her to. And I'm here for it. Also, her brows are perfect. So, I mean, really, it could just be 60 minutes or 45 minutes of just her eyebrows and I'll be happy. But I'm definitely here for Pearl Mackey. I'm definitely here for Doctor Who. The first episode was good. It was great. So I'll be tweeting about Doctor Who for a little bit, as well as I'll be tweeting about Badlands. See, all these shows with inclusion, meaningful inclusion on top of that. Because the Badlands, if you haven't already, you should be checking out the Badlands. Again, if it's not your cup of tea, then it is not your cup of tea. But I've been doing those Iron Fist recaps, and it just makes me appreciate the Badlands that much more. The fights, the way that they're edited, the choreography, all of that is just legit, and just so much inclusion on my screen. The Barons, Sunny, Vale, everybody. So, and just like a lot of blood. So I'm here for that too. I don't really rock with The Walking Dead anymore for reasons, but you know, I get my gross blood outtakes and everything, my feel, I get that from the Badlands. And yeah, so the Badlands, if you haven't checked it out, you should. Season one is actually on Netflix, 6 episodes. It's a really quick watch, and the pacing is really good. Like, it, I never really watched the first season. When I watched, I didn't really feel a sense of, oh, when, like, what is going on and when is this over? Meanwhile, when I'm watching Iron Fist, I feel that all the time. And if you would like to listen to me trudge through those Iron Fist recap episodes, definitely could for $5 on Patreon by becoming a patron of the Lemonade Podcast. So you, yeah, I should be doing a better job about selling that, but yeah, you can listen to me suffer through that. So a last few couple of things, the Thor trailer definitely came out. I forgot the Justice League trailer came out the last time I dropped the episode. I didn't talk about it, but that's because I don't really care about the Justice League. Like, I'm probably going to see it just because, you know, it's at the movies, and I think it's coming out sometime in the fall. So just as an indoor activity. But the only reason why I brought up Justice League while bringing up Thor is because people brought up Justice League after the Thor trailer, and I was just like, all right. But Thor, someone tripped and put some Guardians of the Galaxy in it. Now, yeah, I do know that Thor and the Guardians are all in the same universe. No shit. But it just felt very Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'm not mad at that at all. I'm not. This is actually the first Thor movie that I'm actually looking forward to watching. Tessa Thompson came on the screen, and honestly, Tiffany Pollard smoking a cigarette meme, that's what I'm going to see it for. I mean, everything else, I mean, even Hulk being there, I'm just like, whatever, okay, that's great. World War Hulk, that's cute, that is fantastic. We have Loki, we have Hela, fantastic. But really, honestly, and also truly, I am there for Tessa, and that's it. And also, you know, Chris Hemsworth looks pretty good with his haircut. So I know a lot of people weren't really a fan of that, but I was like, you know what? I'm here for it. So Thor will be out in November, but this trailer really felt like it should have been a summer movie. Now, I know the Thor movie previously came out in November, but the very first Thor movie came out in May. So it's not like they didn't have any wiggle room. Like, they really could have put it in the summer, but that trailer just made me think of that. Also, Flash Gordon, which I just recently watched. Good movie, but there are some really, really terrible racist tropes in it. But yeah, that was probably a movie that I probably should have left from my childhood. But yeah, Flash Gordon vibes all the way through. And the last two thing, while I brought up Justice League, and we're talking about WB and DC, Wonder Woman, what is going on with the marketing? Because I feel like I just randomly remember that there is a Wonder Woman movie coming out in the summer. And I don't know if that's a mixture of, I'm just kind of lukewarm about it. And I'm just like, I'm going to see it, but I'm not like all just ready to go see it. And also, like, I just feel like marketing has been lacking. I don't watch a lot of live TV, but when I have sat down and watched, like, I think I've maybe seen the Wonder Woman trailer maybe once. And I just feel like it feels like it's lacking. I could be wrong, but then again, the timeline has told me differently and other people feel that way too. So also, people bringing this up and then folks getting mad because folks are bringing that up. Like, what are you mad for? Obviously, we want you to win. We want Wonder Woman to win. So we would like the marketing to be better. Like, I don't really understand, like, why get your draws or your panties in a bunch about people wondering why there isn't more marketing for Wonder Woman. To me, if there was, that would be better. But again, I digress. To wrap things up, I'm talking about shows. American Gods, the audiobook, I finally finished it and I really enjoyed it. First off, audiobooks are clutch. They're amazing. Glad that I discovered them while I was on maternity leave because, hey, I can do other things and also kind of read or at least have somebody read to me. But the full cast audiobook, the 10th anniversary, it's one that if you're going to get the audiobook, that's the one that I recommend because it's just great. It's like really good. And also the casting after listening to that is on point. Like on point. I'm talking about T's, cross, dies. I mean, I's dotted, all of that. It is on point. So I'm really looking forward to American Gods. I'm going to wait until the day of to start a star subscription because I'm not trying to keep stars after that. But American Gods, I'm definitely looking forward to. And shout out to Belqui being a dark-skinned Black woman. I mean, just bravo to that. It's just, that's just something that I'm here for. So, all right, guys, I think I've, you know, a little brand of lemonade that I wanted to just make real quick and serve up and give to you all. I hope that it was all right and we can get on to this interview, but there was just a lot. And I'm pretty sure there's other stuff that I could just rant about and go on and on and on about for another 30 minutes. But I don't want y'all to be sitting up listening to this podcast past an hour and 10 minutes, which I'm looking at is probably going to be. But I so appreciate you guys rocking with me and continuing to listen. It means a lot. If you haven't already, there is a Patreon for the Lemonade Podcast. So definitely check that out. Spirit moves you. Go ahead and support. And also, I'm on iTunes. So if you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe, rate, all of that. It really helps out a ton. And I'm going to catch y'all on the flip side and see you in about 2 weeks. But in the meantime, please enjoy and listen to this interview that I had with the writer of Marvel's Unstoppable Wasp, Jeremy Whitley. Hey, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Liz.
We want to tell you about our podcast, Let Go, Let Flow, which is a girlfriend's appreciation podcast. You remember that show on UPN? It had Tracee Ellis Ross, Jo Marie Jones,
Odin Brooks, Persia White, also known as Tony, Maya, Lynn, and Joan,
and Darnell's trifling ass. So join us as we revisit this iconic show.
Yeah, and like, rate, and subscribe to us on iTunes. You can follow us on Google Play as well, and follow us on SoundCloud.
Yeah, so please do all that. We appreciate it, and we'll see you at Joan's house.
The door is unlocked.
Yes, the door is unlocked. All right, guys. Hey, welcome to another special segment of The Lemonade. I am joined by Jeremy Whitley. If you aren't familiar, you might have heard him on the podcast before a little while back when I first started off, and we talked about a little bit about the Unstoppable Wasp, but we're here to talk
he's here to talk more about the Unstoppable Wasp because she's finally here in her awesome girl laboratory. She's getting it together. We're three issues in at the time of this recording. And yeah, just hey, Jeremy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. We're getting into the meat of this story now. So it's actually, I think, number 4 comes out tomorrow. And, you know, we're going to get to actually see Nadia doing some real fighting this time around.
Yeah, because she, Pound Cakes is the person. Yeah, and I was in it. I was reading and I was just like, oh, wait, that's the end of issue 3. But luckily... Tomorrow is Wednesday and issue 4 will be out. So, okay. So I just have to tell you, this is probably one of my fave Marvel books just because it's so fun. To me, between this and Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, they're the most fun Marvel books I've enjoyed that much reading them. Cause wait, is it Nadia, right?
Yeah, Nadia.
If you've listened to Missy Knife Uninformed Afro, you know I'm the butcher of names. But Nadia. Nadia is just, she's just fun. Somebody who's been in the Red Room all that time. And I just really love how she is experiencing the world for the first time. Do that with a bunch of really cool girls that we get introduced to. So let me not tell you about your book. Can you tell the listeners just more about your inspiration behind Unstoppable Wasp and just, yeah, let us know.
Yeah, I mean, what was really exciting to me about Nadia as a character when, I got the opportunity to pitch her for the series was that she's a girl super scientist, which... with the exception of Moon Girl, there's not too many out there who's, you know, sort of, she comes from this Marvel tradition of you know, super science. And, unfortunately, it's a tradition that has largely been, you know, kept to the men in the Marvel universe, because of, I guess, the time that, people like Hank Pym and Reed Richards and Bruce Banner and these characters were being created, there weren't as many, you know, female scientists visible in the world or in comics. So they didn't quite make their way to as much success as these characters did. I wanted to really hearken back to those kind of comics with that, you know, golden age excitement and fun of science. But with, you know, the type of characters who didn't have a chance to be part of that when it was a golden age. So, you know, you have Nadia, who is the daughter of Hank Pym and his first wife, Maria. And you also get a variety of new characters as part of, you know, Girl Labs, between, Shay, who is a young Brooklynite girl who's into physics, and you have Priya, who's, you know, a young first generation daughter of Indian immigrants and, is really big into biology. And, you get Taina, who's Puerto Rican and is way into, like, building her own robots out of, you know, basically junk on her own.
Yeah, and I appreciate of course, you know me. I definitely appreciate the diversity. So was it really important to you to make sure that, when you wrote this book that you were being inclusive and not just, you know, there's this whole thing of pandering, but when I've been reading The Unstoppable Wasp, not at all that I felt at all this has been, I guess, what folks would call pandering and all, like these, all the girls that she's come into contact with, you know, they fit the story. And yeah, they fit the story and they're there. And I personally really love it because, you know, if I was going to work at Girl Labs, that's how I would envision it looking.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what I wanted to do is this, ultimately, Nadia wants to recruit girls from all over the place. But you know, my thought with this first story was to sort of start with New York City. And I wanted the cast to reflect what New York looks like instead of, you know, what often kind of comic book New York looks like.
Right.
Which is, you know, to focus on a handful of, you know, white characters in the foreground and maybe have a little diversity in the background. Yeah, I wanted to reflect, like, the New York that I think is really, like, to me is really interesting and fascinating, you know, when I go there, that, you know, just kind of walk in neighborhood to neighborhood in New York, you hear, like, you know, the language being spoken around you change, and, you know, it's a very different feel from, you know, one street to the next street, and that diversity is part of what makes New York really interesting, and I think is, you know, reflected in the Marvel Universe in a way that it's not in other comics. So, you know, I think the diversity in it is part of the setting, which I think, you know, gives it feels less like something that's, you know, that's being forced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to mention, I think the biggest thing is that all these characters are, you know, themselves intelligent and self-possessed, so there's never a feeling of like, oh, and there's this character who's dot, 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 well, I guess the black friend. Like, you know, that's not anybody's character. Like, you know, Shay is black, Taina is brown, but there's like at least two or three other things about them that, you know, stick out that you would tell somebody before, like, jumping in on, like, skin color.
So you brought up something earlier about wanting to take, you know, this comic back to the kind of the golden ages of just fun and all of that. And in the first issue, you know, Ms. Marvel is there and also Mockingbird shows up. Now, I honestly don't know a lot about Mockingbird, just, you know, just what I've read of her recently in the comics, but I didn't know that at one time she was a biologist and that she worked with Henry Pym and all of that. So that was pretty cool to read that.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's something that I think has been lost in her backstory in, you know, the last few years. And, you know, it got played with a little bit in her, you know, ongoing series when it was ongoing. And that I wanted to talk about some more because that's a thing that's fascinating to me because, like, you know, she's a character that's sort of been at various times stripped of sort of her complicatedness and that she is a scientist and a woman and also a person that hits things with sticks. And, you know, sometimes she has a pretty sordid history with guys who are both not the best guys you know, guys who are good guys but terrible boyfriends, like Clint Barton. So, you know, she's a complicated character, and I think stuff gets left out. And I wanted to kind of reflect, and even in her introduction, Ms. Marvel is like, oh, yeah, she hits things with sticks, and she used to be married to Hawkeye. You know, whereas what Nadia knows her for, what Nadia knows Barbara Morse for, is, you know, being a scientist who, you know, was into biology and chemistry and was trying to reproduce the super soldier serum at one point and had, like, a whole adventure with Man-Thing and in the swamp and, you know, all those interesting things from her early years that people have kind of forgotten.
Yeah, no, and I just thought that was really cool that you incorporated that because then I was like, oh, wait, I do have Marvel Unlimited, so let me go back and, you know, read some of those older issues that she was in. So, no, I thought that was a really great way to not only introduce us to Nadia, well, you know, in her own book, but also to bring Mockingbird into this and say, hey, you know, she once upon a time ago was somebody who just more than just hit sticks or, you know, wasn't just married to Hawkeye. So that was pretty dope. And to me, is really speaks to what the Unstoppable Wasp is and seeing these characters beyond what you normally would see how they're handled, just being, as women, just being attached to or associated to whatever male superhero they've been running around with. So I like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's one of the, it's one of the really fun things about getting to play in the Marvel Universe is that there is a history there, and there are so many characters there that, you know, if you're looking for, you know, a certain type of character or somebody to do something interesting and show up in a book, there's so many options. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it's what weighs you down when you're trying to figure out what to do, but sometimes you hit on something I feel like is really perfect, like that of, you know, having in Ms. Marvel a young, you know, a young, very intelligent woman herself, and you know, having this example from, you know, a previous decade of Mockingbird who used to fulfill this role that Nadia is trying to step into.
Yeah, no, it's a really nice way to usher in new readers and hopefully older readers too that might have been familiar with Mockingbird beforehand. So I think that's a really cool way to kind of blend the old with the new.
Yeah, I mean that's one of my favorite things to do with Marvel stuff is, you know, you get to build new things and create new characters, but you also get to you know, play with these great characters and toys that were created by you know, the people that came before. So it's fun. I love doing it.
Yeah, it shows. It shows on the pages. So another thing that I really, really love about The Unstoppable Wasp is when you get to the very end, when you get to the very or second to last page, and that's Agents of Girl, and you actually have real-life scientists and women in STEM with, I guess it's like a Q&A, and I really love that because actually some of these women, I actually follow them on Twitter. But so what was the inspiration behind that?
So it was a thing that Elsa, the artist on the series, and I talked about a bit as we were, you know, pushing through the series of wanting to do something where we highlighted, you know, real women in science, because there's this sort of, you know, there's a gap between seeing a character doing super science in a comic and being a kid who's reading this and is interested in being a scientist, you know, that we were interested in filling and sort of connecting those two things in a way where, you know, that line is drawn for the reader, like, oh, you know, this is something I could do. You know, maybe not exactly like Nadia does it, but in these ways that are really interesting and exciting. Elsa was the first thinking about making a Tumblr where, you know, we sort of profiled like historic women in STEM, you know, women who had, you know, made great discoveries or made huge contributions to science. And I liked that idea, but I much preferred, you know, having it one in the comic like this. And I knew we were going to have, you know, an option to make a letters page, which has always been, you know, one of my favorite things about Marvel Comics is they have letters pages. You can really see like communication between the creator and the audience, you know, in a way that predates Twitter. and that, like, you can really, I really wanted to have these current scientists who, you know, were right now doing interesting things, because, you know, I feel like you sometimes run the risk of being like, all right, all the science is done, history made, and, you know, having these people that, like, were real life that we could talk to and give their impressions on things, and that we could sort of connect to them with comics, and then also, you know, like, have people's Twitter handles in there where, like, if you were interested in what they were doing, you were reading this comic, you could jump on Twitter and just, like, go talk to these scientists. You know, they're right there.
Yeah, which I definitely have done with Dr. Rochelle Burke. So it's, yeah, I really appreciate the very, very end, because just like you said, it makes things a lot more tangible. It goes from comics to, hey, this really is real life. And if I were maybe reading this 15 years ago, that would have been, you know, a huge inspiration, because it's not just comics. It's it's never just comics. It's always tied to real life in some kind of way. And I think that really helps drive home that point. Another thing that I really love about this comic is that you have like little science facts.
Yeah.
Which I think is really fun. I'm really nerdy and geeky in that way. So, of course, I love that. And I didn't notice it in the first issue. I don't know why, but the second issue, I noticed it. Then I went back to the first issue and I was like, oh, there they are. And I definitely paid attention in the third issue to all of them. But I think that's really cool. Any rhyme or reason behind doing that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have to admit that that was Elsa's idea to some extent, in that, like, the first time we did it is in the scene with the giant robot that Nadia and Mockingbird and Ms. Marvel are fighting in the first issue. And when Nadia drew that, like, or Nadia, when Elsa drew that full page spread of the robot, she did these like cool sort of cutaways where you could see how the robot was working. You could see some of the inner workings of the robot. And I liked these cutaways, but I felt like we needed to like figure out why they were there. And we sort of came up with the idea of Nadia actually breaking down some of the science in this giant robot. You know, just what Nadia would think when she saw it, with, you know, her brain sort of running on this high level of like just picking up science as she's going. And, you know, people like us might not necessarily think about. And it's nice to kind of get to throw that in. And it's also created this like really big challenge for me, where like I have to write a character who's smarter than me in this book in the first place. So like having to like actually research science for this book, and like in issue 3, where she goes to Times Square and like we just basically do a breakdown of like how much electricity Times Square uses up, which was like a really fascinating bit of research for me, because it's a lot. Times Square uses a lot of electricity. It's like you could run your house for like 20 years on what Times Square uses in like an hour, I think.
Oh, wow.
Something like that. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Yeah, but it's really fun to have that stuff in there and to kind of help you think how Nadia thinks and try and understand, you know, who she is as a character in ways that, you know, don't necessarily come across, you know, through straight dialogue. Because I feel like if somebody were so inclined, they could see Nadia as being sort of naive or airheaded because she is so optimistic. But, like, it's obviously not the case as soon as, you know, you see her in a science setting.
Yeah, and actually, let's talk about her a little bit more, because she pretty much grew up in the same facility that is similar to Black Widow, correct?
Yeah.
Right. So, which I think is refreshing that she isn't all jaded after leaving, but, you know, what made you take that direction? Because, I mean, it produced Black Widow, and then we have almost like the polar opposite in her.
Yeah, I think you know, it started off as being something that was inspired by the way Mark Waid had written her in All New, All Different Avengers, where she was, you know, had a youthful exuberance and excitement that like Black Widow has never had. Black Widow has never appeared to be excited for anything other than, like, people dying and things exploding. Mm-hmm. And, like, I was really interested in that and fascinated by that, and that was something that I wanted to focus on a lot as I was writing the series, is to sort of pull out that idea that Nadia hasn't been, and I mean Nadia's reaction to this has actually been sort of the opposite of what Black Widow's was. It's Nadia's is like, all right, I've lost 16 years of my life, but I escaped. Like, I made it out. And if I continue to let my you know, let my life be ruined by what these guys have done to me, then it's like I never escaped. So I have to go and basically, do everything I can and live life as fully and excitedly as I can, because otherwise, I should have just stayed there.
And she's definitely doing it.
Yeah, and she has some lucky aspects that that Black Widow didn't have, and that she started out being sort of in the same program that Black Widow was, and because she was so intelligent and had such an adept ability for science, she was pulled out to go join this part of the program called the science class, where instead of being sent out to murder people, she ended up going ended up being her job being researching things and basically doing the science that creates the weapons that makes killing more people possible. So she never had the, I guess, the burden of having physically in person killed the massive number of people that somebody like Black Widow has.
Which I would imagine would make a world of difference.
Yeah, it's the training is there. It's in the back of her mind, but like the unfortunate consequences to her conscience are not quite the same.
Yeah, which well, thankfully for her and for us, the readers, that's not the case. Like I said, like this has just been one of the more fun comics that I've read this year, and I'm always looking for that because Archie comics were kind of like my first introduction. Those are always fun. So whenever I now as an adult read comics that kind of put me in that same mood, I mean they always have like a soft spot in my heart.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm the same way. I like sort of, well-crafted, fine-tuned machines that are things like Watchmen, and I like the, occasional gritty, street-level story. But I think in a lot of cases what makes characters really worth investing to me is relating to them on a human level, and in a lot of cases it's the fun and the energy and the sense of humor that really attracts me to those characters. And for what it's worth, I think that makes not only the book fun to read, but it also makes when bad things happen, it hits you that much harder.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely agree, because and like I said, I'm waiting for issue four to come out tomorrow to find out whether or not Nadia gets turned into a pancake, 5 pound cake. So hopefully that's not the case. And it was one more thing I wanted to ask you, Jeremy, that I was thinking of while I was reading this. So how important is it that, or to you that, well, I don't know if I can even ask you that, because I was trying to stray away from questions like this, given the thing that just happened with the VP saying. I didn't know if you wanted to speak to that or not, but I guess that's up to you, because given that you're writing a comic that centers women and also women of color as well, to me personally, I think this is what is needed, not just at Marvel, but just period with, comics, because for a while it's been a guys only club, and I don't know why, because women read them too, but I just think stories like this, stories similar to this, are just really, really important, because as a woman reading this, and as a Black woman, and also as a woman who also is a woman in STEM, like books like this, I'm happy that they exist, because like I said, if I was reading this 10 or 15 years ago, this would be something I would definitely gravitate towards, and I can see, getting someone interested in science and saying, or just getting someone interested, period, in reading, discovering more comics and getting into comics, because, you can either see yourself in these characters, and either see yourself or gravitate towards something in them. So I don't know if you want to speak to that, or, you know, do you please how important that is, or
I think personally I feel like it's something that I have a lot of experience with, you know, in parentheses for a white man, because, you know, that's something that I started, you know, with Princeless. Is like, it's a, it's a series that I started working on because I was looking for something that didn't seem to exist. I was looking for a comic, you know, where my daughter could see herself reflected in a positive way as a hero in the book, and you know, as somebody with agency that could save herself. And at that particular point, you know, both Marvel and DC were pretty spare on you know, female characters as leads of books. And you know, since then, obviously it's changed quite a bit. And you know, I think, like any business, there's a certain cyclical element to things where, you know, when things change, people push back. And I think, you know, it's important to hear what fans are saying, but it's also important to consider, like, the market such as it is, because, you know, right now, big companies like Marvel and DC make the majority of their decisions on what comics to make and where to go forward from on the basis of single issue sales, which, you know, has been their bread and butter for, you know, 75 years. And I do think, having had this experience with Princeless, the marketplace has changed quite a bit, in that, you know, in a lot of cases, newer readers, more quote unquote diverse readers, tend to not necessarily be the people who are in a comic shop every week picking up single issues, either because they don't feel they're welcome, or they don't have, you know, experience with that sort of part of the culture, or, you know, in a lot of cases, like myself, like, they didn't have a comic, I didn't have a comic shop near me for years that I could go to. And I think a lot of the problem is that that audience either doesn't know or doesn't like, you know, the direct market comic retail stores. And those are, you know, the comic retail stores are the same people that are giving these bigger companies the feedback on what it is they need to be doing. So, you know, if they don't see these people coming in, they're going to react negatively to these books. But I am confident that if, you know, companies like Marvel hold out and look at longer games, like selling to libraries and selling to schools and selling in bookstores, you know, where a new audience can actually find their books and does exist, that, you know, they're going to see different sorts of results. I think that's played out to a spectacular degree with a book like Chelsea Kane's Mockingbird series, where it didn't have the numbers that they were hoping for in the direct market, and the book was canceled. And then, you know, between everything that went on around that book and the release of the trade paperbacks for that book, like, the trade paperbacks were the number one sellers, you know, for comic books on Amazon, you know, in the weeks after their release. So, you know, it would have been, if that book had still been going on at the point that they sold those huge numbers of trade paperbacks, the odds are pretty good they would have had, you know, readers that kept reading that book, and made it well worth it continuing to exist. But, you know, I understand that, you know, companies like Marvel, it's hard to make that sort of turn and see that sort of shift, especially when, you know, you're a company of that size, trying to listen to that many different voices and steer that size of a ship, that change doesn't necessarily come fast, cheap, or easy.
Yeah, and just another aspect to that, you know, buying single issues, like, that gets expensive. Because, you know, I think I was a pool list that I'm actually getting ready to get rid of and then start a new one. But, you know, buying, let's say, 4 or 5 titles a week at, you know, $3.99, like, that gets you, you're easily almost spending $30 bucks sometimes at a week. And I know for a lot of folks, they'll wait for a trade, the trade paperback to come out. I know I was one of those folks, and sometimes I still do, depending on the book. And, you know, if it's one that I really like and I need to read every issue each month when it comes out, or if I feel like it's something I can wait on. But there's that pressure of, well, if I don't buy every issue, or I don't pre-order, if I don't do this, I don't do that, then there's a good chance that this book will get canceled. And even if I do, there's still a good chance that this book will get canceled because, like you just said, things are changing. Not everyone has access to a local comic book store, and a lot of people read digitally. And I don't know if that's numbers that they're actually counting at the time. But because I know I buy a lot of my comics sometimes digital if I can't wait to get through the comic, if I can't, you know, wait to go to the my local comic book store to pick up my pull list. Sometimes I'll end up buying the issue twice sometimes, which is not always financially feasible, but sometimes I'll buy the digital copy because then, like, it's convenient. It's, like, right there at your fingertips.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, digital numbers are, I don't know, like, it's such a weird game mm-hmm. in that they come in so many different forms through so many different platforms, be it, you know, depending on the book, Comixology and Amazon and, you know, Nook and several other smaller apps and devices. And then, you know, depending on the comic, iTunes as well. And then, like, you know, you have subscription services like Marvel Unlimited. And, like, nobody knows what those numbers are. Like, they're not shared, and they're coming from so many different sources that even if they were, it would be really hard to really tabulate all of them and see how they really shake out. So I think that's another case where, you know, the market is still sort of adjusting to figuring out what digital sales are and what they mean and how, you know, how they matter compared to physical sales, because I think a lot of places still just aren't used to it. And, you know, it's almost impossible to tell whether a book is doing well or not digitally without, you know, being the person that's actually getting a report on it.
Yeah, and, like, I hope that's something that can be figured out. I mean, I know it won't be overnight, but figured out soon how to kind of compile those numbers and really get an idea of how a book is doing in both physical and digital, because I honestly feel like if those digital sales were able to be, you know, keeping track of much better, then I think the story would be a lot more different, or the narrative would be a lot more different. Like, hey, you know, these books are selling. Because like I said, you know, sometimes it's just really convenient to just purchase, download, and then there you go. And then Comixology makes it so easy sometimes where the way that you can read the comic, you can go panel to panel, which I love. It makes things really nice, and you get to really see the detail of the panel, and you don't miss little stuff, because sometimes I'll miss little things reading the entire comic, you know, the actual page itself. Sometimes I'll miss something. I have to go back and read the comic like 2 or 3 times, but I think that's just me. But no, I hope that changes, because I really feel like that would tell a different story. The bottom line would be different.
Yeah, sure. And I think, you know, we're in a position now where there are, I think, comics that are very successful digitally that, like, mm-hmm. people don't necessarily understand. Like, you know, you see comics that have what would be considered bad numbers in print, but, you know, are still being made. And I think in a lot of cases that reflects a company that is seeing, you know, overall very strong digital numbers for a book and it's not necessarily something that shows up when, you know, everybody is trying to figure out what the top 100 comics are for, you know, Diamond last month.
Yeah, no, right. If we could one day retire Diamond, not soon, but just one day, because I don't know, that's another thing. I wonder if that would help out some of these other titles that, you know, to me, I would think that they were doing really well, but once that comes out, it's like, oh, it's not. Because I just think that people that are new to comics, I don't think they really get and understand, you know, there's this argument about, you know, pre-ordering, and once again, is there even a comic book shop within, you know, somewhere near you? Also, can you get to the comic book shop? Like, there's just so many factors that I honestly never thought of before, and I've just now started really considering from, you know, talking to folks and just my own personal experiences. It's just like, you know, unfortunately, it's not as black and white as, you know, hey, people weren't buying this, but there are a multitude of reasons why they didn't buy it versus they just didn't want it because they weren't interested in it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have one of my biggest fans on my Raven the Pirate Princess series, you know, has griped a couple of times when, you know, issues come out and for whatever reason they don't get posted to Comixology on time, because she lives in, like, the middle of nowhere, Alaska. There are no comic book shops near her, so if it's not, you know, available digitally, she's not going to be able to get it. And, you know, that's a sale that, you know, wouldn't have been made a few years back before Comixology was as easily accessible thing as it is now. And, you know, when we're working without knowing any of those numbers, it kind of gets frustrating and sometimes confusing, I think, to people looking at it from the outside.
Yeah. No, definitely, for sure. All right, Jeremy, well, I don't want to keep you long. You've been amazing. Thank you for coming back. I was excited to talk to you the first time. Definitely excited to talk to you again after Unstoppable Wasp has come out. And, you know, I genuinely mean it. Like, I really do love this book, and I look forward to it when it comes out. Because, like, I mean, it's more than just fun, at least for me. Like, yeah, the fun is what's drawing me, and that's why I'm there. But it's also because, you know, I can relate to all these girls. And, hey, I'm reading it at work when I should be doing science stuff. So, but I feel like I'm kind of doing science stuff because I'm reading about it. So at least that kind of, yeah, that's what I tell myself.
So you boss, you learned all about teleporters today, and, you know, you're going to start working on that.
Well, they're supposed to be, we're getting a new microscope, which is really cool. And they're going to start construction on that. Be nice if Nadia was there, because she probably could get it set up a lot quicker than they will, but that'll be a month thing going on, so I'll have enough downtime to read a lot more Unstoppable Wasp, Princeless, and go back and read The Misty Knight. So yeah, I got that.
It'd be really useful to be able to shrink down to that size when you're trying to calibrate a telescope, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me, and I can't wait to read Unstoppable Wasp issue 4 and 5, 6, 7. You know, hoping for more than one. Let's get 24 issues. Let's go 36.
That's ambitious. I don't know if there are any comics out right now that are at 24 issues in an ongoing series. But hey,
we'll figure it out. All right. Well, thank you so much, sir. And Nadia said new phone, who just naturally cracked me up, so I forgot to tell you that. But I laughed for a good little bit.
Sorry, what did she say that cracked you up?
She said, new phone, who this? When she got her new cell phone, and that tickled me, because I was like, yeah, that sounds like you you heard that. And because she's just absorbing everything, I was like, that was cute.
Yeah, just that, and that she's cool like Fozzie.
Yes, which cracked me up too. It's like,
yeah, that's one that I wrote, and I was like, that's hilarious. That's a great joke. I'm funny.
No. It was funny because I was like, wait, no, she definitely meant Fonzie, but that's fine because, I mean, it fits her. It fits her character. The way that you're writing her really comes across as believable, and even when she does say corny things, like, it fits because she's been in the science class for 16 years, so... No, it fits perfectly. Like, I really do adore her character.
It's great because I'm full of corny jokes, so it's a pairing.
All right, okay, so for real, thank you again for joining me. And guys, if you haven't already, please check out Unstoppable Wasp, also All New, All Avengers, so that you can get introduced to her there. And if you haven't already, check out Princeless, and guess where you can find that out? On Comixology, and you can actually... We have, I think, Comixology Unlimited. You can read, I think, the first volume. So you got some options out there.
Yeah, and the first volume of Unstoppable Wasp is available for pre-order right now, either, you know, at your comic shop or through Amazon. So you can pick up that first volume. I believe it'll be the first four issues.
Yeah, and look at it, and you'll save. And if that's your thing, you'll save a couple of dollars. So definitely hop on that. All right, guys. Well, I'll catch you on another episode.